Welcome to the Hospital Finance Podcast, your go-to source for information and insights that can help you protect and enhance revenue at your hospital. And now, the host of the Hospital Finance Podcast, Michael Passanante.
Hi, this is Mike Passanante, and welcome back to the Hospital Finance Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Andrew Wilson. Andrew is the research team leader at the Alterum Institute's Center for Payment Innovation, formerly the Healthcare Incentives Improvement Institute, where he leads new research initiatives and provides consulting support to CPI's core activities and products. His research interests include risk adjustment, methods performance measurement, and the design of new payment models. In addition, he is a doctoral candidate in the Health Services Research Program at Brandeis University's Heller School for Social Policy and Management. For his dissertation, he's examining the application of network analysis in assessing integrated provider networks and the influence of these networks on healthcare costs and quality. And Andrew has joined us today to review the findings of a study he led entitled Debunking the Argument That the Bundled Payment for Care Improvement Program Contributed to Higher Procedure Volumes. Andrew, welcome to the show.
All right, thanks for having me.
So before we begin, can you just explain to our audience a little bit about what Alterum does?
Sure. So Alterum is a research and consulting organization. Much of their work in the past has been in these supporting the Department of Defense and TRICARE and the Veterans Affairs Administration and some of their, you know, healthcare issues and implementations. CPI is actually relatively new to Alterum. We were formerly the Healthcare Incentives Improvement Institute. We merged with Alterum at the beginning of the year. And most of our work is around the development of the Prometheus Analytics software. I'm not sure, perhaps some of your listeners are familiar with that, but it's kind of an episode grouper software that groups claims into episodes, and we use that to for performance measurement and bundled payments. And so we work with payers as well as some providers on thinking about bundled payments and implementing bundled payments and providing technical assistance when they need it.
Excellent. Thanks for that explanation. As I mentioned, the study we'll be discussing today is entitled Debunking the Argument That the Bundled Payment for Care Improvement Program Contributed to Higher Procedure Volumes. Andrew, can you explain why this study was initiated and what the goals were?
Sure. So there was a study that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association back over the fall by some folks at the Lewin Group and CMS and a couple of other organizations. And it was the first major evaluation of the BPCI program, and they looked in particular at major joint procedures. So the BPCI program as it relates to hip and knee replacements. And the primary goal was to look at the impact on costs and quality. And what they found was very promising for BPCI and what everyone was hoping, and that was that, you know, relative to non-participating hospitals, BPCI participants were able to reduce their costs even further than what was observed overall. And mostly that was driven by lower use of post-acute care services. Importantly, they also found that there was no decrease in quality. So, you know, lower costs, no change in quality, and they measured quality, by the way, in terms of readmissions, ED visits, and mortality. So none of those went up, which is a good thing. So that was a promising thing for BPCI. Now, as a secondary analysis in there, they addressed kind of this issue of whether bundled payments lead to higher volumes, because that's always been an ongoing, I guess you might say, academic discussion, because it's been mostly theoretical. But they did want to take a look and see whether that bore out or not during the first few months of BPCI. And when they looked at that, they looked at procedure rates on a per quarter basis. And when they compared the participants to non-participants in the post-intervention period, they found the results suggested there was a slight increase, a bump in procedure rates among the participants, but their findings were actually statistically non-significant. So in the research world, we would say that there was actually no effect on volume. Now, the issue came in for us with an accompanying editorial that was done by a prominent health services researcher in relation to this study. And he kind of what he did in the paper was to sort of debunk the findings a little bit. And the way he did this was to actually take their findings around volume and almost accept them as facts. So even though the authors themselves didn't find a true significant difference in volumes between participants and non-participants, he actually kind of suggested that was true, and then went on to show how if you take that finding and kind of multiply the numbers out to get to total costs, and you compare those total changes over time, you actually find that the participants decrease spending less than the non-participants. To us, that was a rather irresponsible application of the results, A, because we can't actually conclude from the findings of the study that there was no, that volumes were actually not higher among participants. And second of all, the authors themselves stated in the conclusions that, well, you know, they did the analysis, but because they, the methods and the fact that they didn't have the complete universe of procedures, lower joint procedures that were completed, paid for by Medicare during that period, they really can't say a whole lot or be definitive about the impact on volume. So we really had a problem with the assertion that was made in the editorial. So our goal was to actually, you know, go back to the data, see if we could get the full universe of the lower joint procedures, redo the analysis, and, you know, support the findings of the original study that there was no increase in volume, and then see if we could do a secondary analysis to further refute the claims and show that maybe there were likely other factors that would explain the increase in volume over time. So that's where we get into this regional issue in the paper, but we'll get into that.
Andrew, can you briefly go over your methods and the data you reviewed in your study?
Yeah. So we worked with a group that we have a relationship with called CareSet, and they have access to 100% of Medicare claims over several years. And they provided us with the full universe of hip and knee replacement procedures performed at all hospitals in the United States over the period 2011 and 2015. Using that data, we then went and supplemented it with publicly available data from CMS indicating what hospitals were participants in BPCI and those that weren't. And so using that data, we then went and replicated the analysis of the original study, so looking at changes over time between participants and non-participants in the number of procedures that they performed, and then compared those changes to see if there was any difference between them. So, you know, if the change was greater among participants than non-participants, it would suggest that there was higher volume. Of course, we looked at the raw numbers and the trends over time as well. And then as a secondary analysis, to kind of get at this idea that to buttress our the findings, or what we hope to be the findings, that there was no change in volume, that we could potentially explain the higher volumes over time overall by some regional factors and show that it was these regional demographic and market trends that was actually driving these increases in volume over time and not the BPCI program itself. So, A, revisiting the analysis of the JAMA paper and then trying to buttress our analysis with some further data.
Andrew, can you tell us what you found the effect of BPCI to be on hospital level volumes?
Yeah, in our primary analysis, our replication of the original JAMA study, we've essentially confirmed their results. We found that there were no differences in the change in volume over before implementation of the BPCI program versus after. So participants did not perform more procedures than non-participants because of the BPCI program itself. And I think that's the main takeaway from our study, which is that BPCI itself does not seem to be, and we don't think it's associated with any increases in volume, despite what was in the assertions made by that editorial. Interestingly, you know, when we looked at the raw data, and this is kind of a secondary piece to this, was that if you look at just the raw changes over time between participants and non-participants, the increases among the non-participants is actually greater as on a percentage change basis than the actual participants. And even when you go down further on a year-by-year level, we actually saw that from in the final years of our data that procedure volumes actually decreased a little bit among participants. So there was there clearly and definitively we cannot attribute any higher volume or volume increases to the BPCI program. That just seems to not have happened.
So BPCI alone didn't seem to increase the volume. Were there any other regional factors or other factors associated with volume increases that you did see?
Yeah, and this was the secondary piece to our analysis, because we wanted to illustrate that probably what we're seeing are, you know, broader demographic and market trends. So when we looked at the association of some of these factors with changes in volume over time, and by the way, we looked at this at a regional level, not at the hospital level, we did find some interesting results. So we found that, as you might expect, higher or increases in the number of Medicare beneficiaries, but particularly fee-for-service beneficiaries in the area, was contributed to higher volumes. You would expect that because higher demand. We found that greater competition was associated with more procedure volumes or greater procedure rates. The number of facilities in an HR was associated with higher procedure rates. And interestingly, the Medicare penetration, Medicare Advantage penetration in a region was associated with lower procedure rates. And then finally, we found that greater minority populations in an area was associated with a lower procedure rate or a change in procedure rates over time.
I want to drill in on something you just said in your previous response. You found that hospital referral regions with high competition actually have a larger number of lower joint procedures. Can you give us some insight into why that may be?
Yeah, and I have two kind of theories that I think about this here. And this is actually a question we've been asked a lot, and it's kind of one of the more slightly interesting aspects of the study and our findings. The first piece to this, I think, is this idea of competitive pressures in a market and what has been termed in the past maybe as the medical arms race. So, you know, as hospitals compete aggressively with each other in an area, there's been a tendency to be the go-to hospital or to offer the services that everybody that is in demand and kind of makes you that go-to place. So hospitals adopt technologies and offer service lines to sort of compete with one another to draw in patients. But once they get those service lines and those technologies in place, then there's got to be some effort to justify having those and provide the revenues for devoting the resources to those service lines. So I think those competitive pressures to both offer the service lines, but then, you know, have to justify providing them leads to some aggressive activities to boost procedure rates and volumes over time. And we've seen this on a lot of aspects. Literature shows, you know, greater competition leads to greater adoption of technologies for example, robotic surgeries. We know that in areas with greater competition, there's both greater adoption of robotic surgery and then, as a result, greater use of robotic surgery. So, so that confirms with previous all sorts of previous literature. The second piece of this, I think, is this idea of supply-sensitive care. It's very related to what I just mentioned. So the more supply of services in an area, the greater use of those services. The Dartmouth Atlas has shown this repeatedly over time. You know, areas with more specialists tend to use much more specialty care. The same applies in this case, likely with joint replacements. The more hospitals provide joint replacement services, the more they're going to get used in those areas. So that's just the way, something we've witnessed over time in a lot of different areas, and I think joint replacements are just as much a supply-sensitive sort of service as anything, as plenty of other things. So it follows along with that line of reasoning.
Andrew, are there any other final thoughts you'd like to mention about the study?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things we haven't talked about much about is that I think our findings show that BPCI itself hasn't contributed to volumes. It addresses this lingering question about this ongoing question we've had about the impact of bundled payments on volume. But I don't want this to be taken as the final word. Clearly, BPCI has an effect on volume, but we're still kind of early in the episode in bundled payment space, and you know, we shouldn't. It's just something we should continue to keep our eye on. I think I've always been a little bit skeptical of this volume question and the ability of bundled payments to lead to higher volumes. That's a really tough thing to do, is to manufacture things from a provider's perspective. But it's something we should continue to look at. So it shouldn't be taken as a final word, but it's possible that things could happen in the past. So let's look at it, but let's not, you know, get too crazy about worrying about this.
Andrew, that was great information. Thanks for taking some time to explain your study to us and helping us understand more about the effect of BPCI on procedure volumes.
Thank you, Mike. It's a lot of fun.
If you have a topic that you'd like us to discuss on the Hospital Finance Podcast, or if you'd like to be a guest, drop us a line at update@bessler.com.
This concludes today's episode of the Hospital Finance Podcast. For show notes and additional resources to help you protect and enhance revenue at your hospital, visit Bessler.com/podcasts. The Hospital Finance Podcast is a production of Bessler Consulting.